It was well known that if we got in.
So we are 160 plus days into this full bore war. And I tell you, I don't get excited talking to Hollywood people or sports people. I don't care about all that. But Joe Kent, amazing military veteran, you name it, the former head of the National Counterterrorism Center, resigned 2 weeks into this disastrous war and blueprinted and predicted what was going to happen and said, Trump, I love you. You can read his letter. We'll post it here. This is going to be a disaster. He's been proven right. And people like him are still being demonized by the corporate media that wants this war. People that lied Trump into it are seen as a hero. So it was great to be part of this debate Brandon Strzok put out that's going to be aired in about a week on just the civil war within MAGA. But I don't think it's a civil war. I think it's people that care about America, as you've said, that are just simply trying to put their two cents in to try to correct the course. But back when you said what you said, I agree with you because I'd studied the same information, didn't have all your sources, but I thought you were right, probably right. Now you've been proven right, but I've noticed in all the interviews I've seen, you're not doing a victory lap. You seem pretty sad about the fact that you were proven right. So if you could just kind of brief the American people and brief President Trump on an off-ramp here and where you think this is going, as you were so accurate before, if we don't turn this around.
Well, we have a narrow window to actually end the war and get out of it right now. We have a tentative, not ceasefire on paper, but we're not actively shooting at the Iranians. However, President Trump believes that he needs to have a piece of paper, some sort of a formal deal. The Iranians simply will not give him a formal deal. We have galvanized the Iranian people around the current regime by killing the supreme leader, by the tragic strike that we did against the girls' school. The Iranians right now believe this war is existential for their survival. They're
and
not going
to
give President Trump.
They would close the Strait again, which they did yesterday. I did this interview after the great debate that we taped Saturday up in Dallas. Brandon Strzok was putting these on. Tell us about the past debates you've done, people hiding under a rock. They've been mega viral. When you think this is coming out and what you're planning in the future?
Yeah. Well, let me start by saying in this clip that people are seeing on the screen right now, the background, the stage for that is actually for, it was kind of fun, like a conspiracy theory debate that we did that we're putting out for Halloween. I'm only mentioning that because several of my influencers did interviews in front of this backdrop and people were just like, this looks satanic. What are they doing? Are they practicing Satanism? It's like, no. It's for fun. It's for Halloween. I'll walk you through it. This is exactly what happened. At the beginning of this year, like around January, December of last year, January of this year, my team and I got together and started strategizing, what is Walkaway going to do for this year? You know, usually we plot out colleges that we're going to go to, what our initiatives are going to be. This is a midterms year, very important. So we were going to put a huge focus on youth and affordability. That's what we thought was the most important issue going into the midterms. How can we inspire young people to come out and vote? Then it's like week after week after week, things, I just felt this divide deepening and growing. And as we started planning this sort of like youth midterm summit we were going to do, we started putting out some like initial feelers on it and the feedback that we were getting. I mean, literally, I'm not making this up. Overwhelmingly, people were saying, don't bother, we're not coming, or don't bother, we're not voting. Like literally, this was the feedback I was getting. And I was like, this is really bad, really bad. So then the debate started getting larger about Iran. The debate started getting larger about Israel. The debate started getting larger about Trump. Is he doing a good job? Is he not doing a good job? And it seemed like no matter what you said, anybody, whether it was you, me, anybody, no matter what you said, it was like walking through a minefield. Something would blow up. Someone would get upset if you criticize Trump. Someone would get upset if you praise Trump. And so we're like, what are we going to do? Like, how are we going to get through this year? What are we? So we decided to scrap the youth summit because people already said we're not going to come and we're not going to vote. And I finally looked at my team one day and I said, what if we actually just address the divide? Like, what if we just tackle it head on?
I agree. The story is the divide.
The story is the divide. And what if rather than just like bitch about it and amplify it, let's actually try to do something productive.
And you hit the nail on the head. We got to break and join okay, 400. Okay. No, we got to break and join 400 plus stations. No, it's just a weird 5-minute thing we do.
Sure.
We don't want to waste the time for people that don't carry it. People that do. But where do people find the past debates?
Go to the Walkaway Campaign YouTube channel, YouTube hashtag Walkaway Campaign. So far, we've put out really three, the Boomers versus Millennials. And then the next one was MAGA versus America First. And it was so long, it became two parts. But we have five more coming in the next couple of months.
But this is important how you were really addressing it. Now that is the big debate. You kind of did it first. But the story is the divide. We'll come back, talk more about that, then get more into Tucker. As I mentioned it, play a clip of Hunter Biden and then the Southern Poverty Law Center we've seen.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigly has launched an online pharmacy 1776RX.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with minbenzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but minbenzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search minbenzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776RX.health.
Waging war on corruption. It's Alex Jones coming to you live from the front lines of the info war.
All right, Brandon, some stations don't care that first five, but you were really kicking ass. That's what you know. Recap. You launched these debates, and everything you've done has been very successful. These are super viral. Three have already aired. You've now taped a few more. One of them we just did, the Saturday MAGA versus America First, which I thought MAGA was America First, but you're right. It really isn't. Very powerful. I want to talk about why you did those. The story is the divide, and if the Republicans don't want to lose the midterms, they better address that. I've talked to pollsters that have met with Trump. They know that. At least he had that thing with Kennedy yesterday, the executive order saying, let's restrict the number of shots from 71 to like 11 or whatever. So, again, I want Trump to succeed. My God, I'm not for Hassan Piker and Mondami, but just take your time and finish up with your, because that was visionary. Now it seems simple. Oh, well, of course, we should be debating the divide, but nobody was actually debating why there is a divide. The only way to transcend how mindless it was, you compliment Trump, you're a devil. You bash Trump, you're a devil. And when we're not in a cult, we're trying to have a serious debate about how Trump has changed.
Right. Yeah. So, like I said before the break, there's no safe place you can step right now. And once we get through this midterms and get into next year and the year after, all of these influencers, people are going to know who they can trust and who they can't trust because, and by the way, it should be obvious to anybody with good discernment, but if you're somebody who's out there just absolutely avoiding the discussion of what is happening right now in this divide, in my mind, you shouldn't be an influencer, and you should, because you're not a person who's capable of being honest. You're not brave. You're not courageous. You're probably just a grifter. I think the people who are out there, like actually taking a stance and taking hits, people need to look at that and realize these are the people you can trust. And so I was having a conversation with my team and I was saying, like, how are we going to get through this? Like, what do we do? Because no matter what we say or what we do, something blows up. And then I said, well, what if we just address the divide? What if we actually just try to find a productive way to have this conversation, see if we can bring people back together and find some common ground? It won't be easy, but at the very least, try to help people understand why this is happening. And the reason why I thought this was so important, my parents are in their 70s, and they're very bright people. And I don't mean this condescendingly, but they are as informed as somebody in that age group can be. And what I mean by that is they spend all day long watching Fox News and they spend all their social media on Facebook. Like that's the platform that they go to. So they are as informed as somebody can be who gets their information.
My parents too.
From those platforms. And so probably back in March or April, I was visiting them in their house and I said something like, so what do you think about this divide that's happening right now with, you know, Tucker and Megyn Kelly and Mark Levin and this and that? And my mom said, what are you talking about? And I said, You don't know that there's like a big war happening right now, like in MAGA? And she was like, no. And I was like, I don't even understand how that's possible. So I started walking her through it and she was kind of like mind blown. And in that moment, I realized, wow, like a lot of older people don't even know this is happening. And a lot of my audience is older. And I think
that's indicative of Trump. People know he kind of gets it now, but he didn't realize. He thought it was some little fringe thing.
Yeah, well, that's a really great point, because first of all, he is in that age group. But second of all, he's the most powerful man in the world. And he's surrounded by people, I think, who are telling him what he wants to hear. Which is normal. I think any president is probably surrounded by a lot of yes men and people who want to please. But I don't think that he's getting an accurate account of how people are feeling on the ground and how this divide is split up. But I learned from that conversation with my mother that this divide is not just ideological, it's generational. And that if you're over the age of 60, 65, you have a completely different perspective of what's going on in the conservative movement than anybody under the age of 50. Now, my instincts, and as far as I'm concerned, were proven absolutely correct with Thomas Massie's primary. I mean, if you look at the breakdown of how that primary election went, pretty much everybody under the age of 50 supported Massie, and everyone over the age of 65 voted against Massie. And it's an information war that's happening that's split along generational lines. So I thought to myself, wouldn't it be something if we got conservatives in one room, baby boomers and millennials, and made that the first debate that we did? I thought it was going to be really good, but I had no way. I mean, it was like it lit the internet on fire. I mean, I actually thought people responded to it better than I expected to, because people were like, this was the most incredible debate that I've ever seen. And people, Walkaway Campaign YouTube channel, go Boomers versus Millennials. That was our first one. And then
and that was powerful, but I'm going to tell you, the new one is going to be boom.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And I think, you know, and we're learning as we go. So I think they keep getting better, and I think they keep getting more. So,
but the second one was interrupted.
Oh, no, yeah. So the second one was MAGA versus America First. It wasn't generational. I mean, everyone in the room was in their 20s and 30s, maybe a few people in their 40s. It was mostly just debating the issues and the policies. But we got to get some really good stuff out on the table, because on the MAGA side, what did we have? 4 versus 4, I think. And I think all four of the MAGA people would identify as Zionists. And the America First people, probably not so much. But, you know, we got to get some of that stuff out on the table, including, you know, who's being paid online to push propaganda that is, you know, I'm not saying necessarily against America, but not, you know, is on behalf of a foreign country.
Exactly. It's every cliche of Israel now, with them bragging, oh, we're going to secure our foreign policy control by taking over the U.S. We're going to primary anybody. 39 states, we're going to pass laws that it's illegal if you're critical of Israel to have a government contract. Yep. That's a social credit score. That's tyranny.
Yeah.
Well, and so Israel has forced me to become seriously critical, because everybody used to draft me or try to draft me into attacking Israel. That wasn't my bailiwick. But right now, I mean, Israel really is running Trump to a great extent, and it's a nightmare. I mean, look at the NDAA, all of it.
Well, and people need to stop it with this Jews thing. Stop it. No one I know hates Jews. I'm sure that there is some real anti-Semitism out there. I'm not denying that. There are some people who are bigots on both sides of the aisle. I don't deny that. But every person I know in my orbit who is critical of Israel or becoming increasingly critical of Israel is not that because they have any negative opinion about Jews. In fact, I think everyone I know is loves Jews. I love Jews. But
what the media does is they go pick the critics of Israel that are basically anti-Semitic, and they magnify it to make it that. And then when other people that aren't that sophisticated that are critical, some of them are getting drawn to that. Israel admits their propaganda is totally failing.
Well, you say it's the media. I think you're being very generous. I'm seeing it a lot with just online influencers.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. The social media.
Israel spent $1.3 billion on influencers.
Yeah, well, it money well spent, because I think if you're under the age of 50, you're not falling for it. But if the goal was to propagandize on behalf of the baby boomer generation, which we shouldn't discuss, I mean, it's still the largest voting bloc. I mean, they have a lot of power, a huge amount of power.
Look at the left wants to brainwash and target kids.
Yep.
We're not being mean to old folks, but Israel's brainwashing the old people. And I mean, it's and I get boomers calling and go, don't blame us. Okay. We know 30-40% of you are just awake as we are. We're not bashing older people. I'm older myself. My God, everybody gets old. But statistically, it is a hard 65% that is totally neocon pro-war, and that's who Trump's counting on right now. So, sorry, the boomers are the bulwark and the fortress of the war. I mean, so I'm sorry. We're talking about those people, not you.
Well, yeah, and I don't think that anybody should take offense to it. When I talk about, you know, the baby boomers and what they believe in, whatever, I'm not making fun of them. First of all, I'm not making fun of them, period, but I'm not making fun of them because they're old. I'm not like, oh, you're old and stupid and gullible. It's literally just a product of what was going on in the time that they were alive. I mean, these are people that were born post-World War II. I think they have a very different perspective of the state of Israel, what that means. Also, my mother, Catholic, diehard Catholic. My mother's probably met less than five Jewish people in her entire life. I say this somewhat condescending or somewhat facetiously, but not really. I think if my mother had to choose between me and Israel pushing me in front of a moving bus, she would choose Israel. I mean, I grew up in a household where it was, you know, Israel's our greatest ally. God blesses those who bless Israel. And this is how a lot of people of that generation feel. So they're having trouble, I think, disconnecting the biblical
and meanwhile,
perception of what Israel.
I agree. The Israel lobby, on average, thinks Catholics hate them. And I know Catholics and Protestants, they love Israel.
Yeah.
Because they exactly. It's crazy.
But we have to be able to, at this point, separate, because I think there's something almost existential for them about Israel. It ties. These are older people. They know their time is limited at this point, and this ties directly to their biblical belief of what life and death means.
Look, I grew up in Dallas with all the super preachers, and I even lived on a block because my parents were, you know, somewhat well-to-do with a bunch of rich preachers. And it was on TV every channel. The end of the world's next month, you know, the Antichrist will attack Israel.
Yes. Well,
it's real simple. Israel is good, and any attack on Israel is the Antichrist. We're not for the Antichrist. And Israel admits they're funding the Christian Zionist movement to do that, and it's crazy. So you have the mullahs that think the 12th Iman's coming. They want the end of the world. You have the Christian Zionists want the end of the world. You've got this group in Israel that's a minority, but it controls the Knesset. They want to make the Messiah come with the end of the world. I want to just say, whether it's Christian Zionist or the Likudnik end of the world people or the Iranian end of the world people, I think they're all crazy.
I just feel so disappointed as somebody who left the left, and I left the left literally for the very reason that, like, I think that one of the best analogies is Black Lives Matter. So the left will tell you that you're a racist and you hate black people and you're a bigot if you're unwilling to say Black Lives Matter, if you're unwilling to hang that sign in the window of your business, if you're unwilling to wear the t-shirt, and you go, it has nothing to do with how I feel about black people. This is a political ideology that I don't agree with.
That's stolen the identity of black people.
And you're using black people to push an ideology that I don't believe in. And now the exact same thing is happening on the right. And for some reason, people don't see it. Don't tell me I hate Jews. I don't hate
Jews. No, you just perfectly encapsulated it.
Yeah.
The pro-war group in the Pentagon, Israel, all of it, has successfully hid behind Jews to launch
100%.
This war and made it all about choose this or that. It's just like Black Lives Matter.
I'd actually argue it's worse, because we have to pay for this war and we're not even allowed to have an opinion about it. We're not even allowed to talk about it. If you talk about it and you express a disfavorable opinion, it means you hate Jews. You're a bad person. You're a bigot. And I'm like, okay, so I just have to keep paying for something that I don't necessarily believe in. I'm critical of, and I can't even talk about it.
It's worse than that. I said back when it started 165 days ago or whatever it was, I said, I don't like the mullahs. If you could hit a button and send them to the moon and nobody else gets killed, I'd do it. But the Pentagon's own report, and Joe Kent said to me, during the debate, he goes, Alex, it's not like I'm a genius. He is smart. He goes, this is the main Pentagon report.
Yeah.
This is the consensus. This was going to fail. Yeah. They close the strait. They'll probably never fall. So it's not just it's wrong to start wars. It's going to fail.
Yeah.
So, like, that's even worse.
Well, and, I look at what's happening to Trump right now. I mean, the greatest thing I think Trump had going for him is he kind of invoked fear, I think, on the world stage, and he made America appear very well. He projected strength,
and people knew what he said he meant.
That's
he
right.
always did it. Now he's flip flops every day.
Flip flops a lot, and it's pretty obvious to anyone paying attention that at the very least, and I'm being generous here, he doesn't have control of the situation in a way that we would like our president, especially.
Well,
this
he does it over and over again. He says 3 days ago, they open the strait. We've got a deal. Great. They close it. Say there is no deal. He goes, I closed it. They close it. He acts like just go, well, I closed it too.
Yeah. I like your Trump impression. It's a pretty good one. This has not been a good venture for him. It's You talk about Joe Kent. I just launched this podcast. He was my first guest and got a lot of really valuable information from him. It's really sad for me to see how demonized he's been because he decided to step down and didn't really want to be a part of this and feels like that we're not on the right track and we're not on the right path. But in my estimation, and I understand it's still somewhat early, he's been right about just about everything.
Totally. Well, here's another thing. I never met him in person. I know people that knew him in the military. 11 tours, highly decorated. Wife gets killed by, you know, ISIS. Super patriot. And meeting him in person, even more impressive. A real gentleman. And he comes out lovingly and says, I appreciate working for you. It was an honor. We're 2 weeks in. Here's an off-ramp. I'm doing this to get attention. Please stop now. And now he's been totally vindicated, and they're still demonizing him. And he was totally classy about the way he did it.
Yeah, yeah. And we're still there. It's still every day. We're winning, we're losing, we're winning, we're losing, we're winning, we're losing. I think this is going to go on for a long, long time. It doesn't. He's saying, Joe Kent is saying, just get out. Just cut your losses. Get out. Let's move on. Which, you know, look, I'm not a.
And then they say, oh, they'll control the strait. No, now they'll be the bad guys closing it.
Yeah.
He's totally right.
He's totally right.
But he explained to me, he goes, it's all classified. But you understand? He goes, we have supercomputers and all the best brains. We knew the right. Trump's old policy of sanctions was the way.
Yeah. Well, and this whole business about, you know, Iran is a week or 2 weeks away from having a nuclear weapon. This literally they've been saying this for like 40 years. I also don't want people to think because, with this divide, people have become so extreme and it's almost like.
It doesn't mean we're for Iran.
Exactly right. Thank you. Exactly right.
We're not handing them a giant strategic victory.
Right. Exactly right. Well, and when I interviewed Joe Kent, one of the things he told me that I found most striking was I said, you know, a lot of people are feeling really let down right now about this administration's kind of soft touch on mass deportations. I mean, we were promised mass deportations. I don't think any of us think that this is an easy job. We know the Biden administration brought in at least 12 million, probably a lot more than that, illegal immigrants, not to mention how many others were already here before that. I think if we had seen this massive and relentless effort to do the best that they could to get as many illegal immigrants out as possible, we could have, we could have been understanding about any shortcomings on that.
You just nailed it. I meant to make that point during the debate and I didn't. It's the Epstein's real. We're going to investigate. No, you're not MAGA. If you look into it, none of it's real. It's a hoax. Well, no, it's a hoax you're involved, sir, but not that it's not real. And then it's Charlie Kirk cover-up by the FBI, which they admit they ordered a cover-up. Joe Kent exposed that. And then it's now this war. And then I have Bovino on 3 months ago, and he goes, I love Trump, but he's actually ordered all domestic internal stuff killed. Later it comes out that's true. Obviously, Bovino's not going to lie. And exactly, it's just like, hey, we don't like this.
But what Joe Kent told me in that interview, so I asked him the question, and honestly, I'll be honest with you, I expected that his answer was our illegal immigrant problem in this country is so huge.
Unfixable.
It's so unfixable that there would have never been a solution or a path. Anyway, that's not what he said. He said, if we had come in from day one with a solid plan and that had been the primary focus of what this administration was going to be about, we could have put, and I'm paraphrasing here, but a massive dent into the damage 100%. That was done. He said the fact that we have wasted so much time, energy, and resources in the Middle East and on global affairs, this has not been a primary focus for the administration, and it is. We have done an inadequate job of what could have been something. And I think if you had asked anybody a year ago, would you rather stop Iran from getting a nuke, which is, you know, weeks away, a week away, or do you want to get illegal immigrants out of our country? Everyone would have chosen.
Well, you nailed it. Even when you've got globalist presidents like Herbert Walker Bush, I used to interview Ray McGovern, who was his main CIA briefer every day. There's been books written about this, as well known. Even when the president is an establishment guy, the CIA and the agencies come in with war and crisis to steal the agenda from domestic stuff because they're doing a bunch of stuff domestically with corporations.
Yeah.
So this is an art form, getting a president distracted with foreign affairs. Yeah. That's what President Washington first talked about. I mean, this is not the first rodeo. So you're absolutely right. And Kent is right that they sucked all the oxygen out of the room where Trump says, I don't care about the average American's money. I care about war. And that's what they've done is they've successfully like the snake in the jungle book hypnotized him into this. And it's very sad. Is there any way to salvage Trump? Is there any way to get him to jump back on the rails here?
Jeez. That's such a great question. I mean, I think almost the better question would be, even if we did, what do we do with the time we have left?
Day late, dollar short.
Kind of, yeah. Because at this point, nothing, as far as I'm concerned, nothing can be done about the midterms because I think that people are too smart and too savvy. I mean, look, we already see right now things that they're trying to do that are that they're kind of like trying to dangle this, like, oh, and it's like, look.
Oh, look, we had a vaccine press conference.
Oh. China. Well, all these documents about China in the 2020 election and stuff. And then days later, President
But Trump, nobody's indicted.
Yeah, President Trump, what are we going to do to China now that we've released all these documents about the 2020 election? His response. Says, well, they do stuff to us. We do stuff to them. This has been a back and forth. And it was a long time ago. So I think people are.
They don't even line up the propaganda.
No. I think people are too savvy these days to fall for anything between now and November. I think November is going to be what it's going to be. And in my estimation, I don't think it's going to be great for us.
Think we lose the House and Senate.
So we have 2 years left after that. And Trump did a complete about face, and to whatever degree Trump is capable of saying, I'm switching course. We're going to get back to kind of the basics and how things were maybe a few years ago. What is he able to do in that amount?
Well, it's
of
like
time?
Trying to go back to your house after it's already burned down.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
What about this? And again, the level of insider trading and insider deals would make Pelosi blush. And I can't just sit there and lie to. It's like the Tucker thing. I love Tucker. This Hunter thing was nauseous. So I just can't lie. I love Tucker. It's the same thing with Trump and insider trading. It's epic level. And then he launches a Truth Social, $100,000 a month, where you can, quote, get his announcements before they happen to dominate the markets. It's like I've never. It's like a Pelosi launched a website and said, you know, I've got insider trading info. I'll sell it to you before. I mean, what the hell? I mean, I'm supposed to sign on to this? I got offered $50 million, was an off-record meeting, so I never say with the globalists before they sued me 8 years ago to sell out to them. I didn't take the $50 million. I'm not going to sell out for cult of personality now. I mean, I've turned down $50 million a year to sell out to the system. If I was going to do it, I'll go do it whole hog, not... It's bizarre.
It's beyond bizarre. And it's like... for anybody watching this and listening, like, this is not what I want to be talking about. That, like, I wish I was sitting here across from you talking about what an amazing our country's back on track.
Trump's things winning. We're deporting.
That's what I want to
be
talking
the
about.
The jobs are coming back.
Right. I don't want.
Instead, hey, Brandon, pay me $100,000. I'll give you stock tips.
I don't want to be doing this. But it's like, look, Alex, I think we could even be sitting here saying some of these things that are very questionable about the amount of money that he's made and the company he's keeping with Thiel and Zuckerberg and all the billionaires.
He wasn't starting World War III and hadn't stop the deportations, we can maybe hold our nose.
We could overlook some of this stuff, but it's like this movement began as the movement where the forgotten everyday people who are struggling were supposed to be represented, supposed to be put first, and their lives were supposed to be back on track. No one can afford groceries. No one can afford gas. People feel like they can't own a home in this country anymore. People are getting married late. They're not getting married at all. But the ones who are getting married are getting married later. They're choosing not to have children. This is not a good path that our country is on. Not at all. And then it just seems like the wealthy billionaire class is being prioritized. And for some reason, a lot of these people, the people who are struggling, are still so hypnotized by what I think they're hoping that it's going to be like it was again. And there's no indication at this point.
Well, they keep saying the Q thing. There's a master plan. Just wait.
How long? Like, and how long can you afford to wait? You know, for me, the issues that I care about the most, and I understand I'm in a niche group. I don't expect other people to care about what I care about. For me, deweaponization, that was like a primary thing.
Let's come back and talk about that. Yeah. You and I both are peers being targeted.
Yep.
Trying to throw us in jail. And yeah, the fact that Todd Blanche killed investigations into what happened to us, and he officially has killed the weaponization program now. Oh. And I'm supposed to, and by the way, I met with the weaponization committee. They have the smoking guns. And they're all just Todd Blanche waves a magic wand, and it's A-OK.
Yep.
Brandon Strzok's our guest. Stay with us. My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege.
It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out at the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones, and the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan, in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
From the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
Back in our studios tomorrow, I'm going to tape a podcast with him. Let's talk about this. Everybody follows what you're doing. You've always had a huge effect in the last 8 years since you burst on the scene, but you're doing really important over the horizon. Tomorrow's news today. Obviously, they want to follow the Walkaway Movement on YouTube. They want to follow you on X at Brandon Straka, Straka. But also, you launched your new podcast. How do people find that?
Yeah, yeah. I would appreciate it if they did find it.
Well, no, when you first launched something, you got to know where it is.
Yeah. So my YouTube channel is at The Brandon Straka. Thank you. I think it's on the screen right now. So I'm on YouTube and Rumble. My Rumble channel is very, very new. Just type in Brandon Straka in the search bar. Please subscribe. I think we've got like 8,600 subscribers or something. You know, my YouTube, I struggle. I really feel like after January 6th, like they kind of put some of these social media platforms.
Oh, massive censorship.
Yeah, well, it's like they let you keep your accounts. But
you're shadow banned.
Right. So it's, in a way, it's almost better to be banned because then you're just banned. Like people know.
Like me.
But you get to keep your account. And it's like, okay, well, you're getting like 3 views on your stuff. And it's like, well, that can't be real. I've got over 1 million followers.
But you're not doing that now. You're kicking ass despite it.
Yeah. So I just launched the podcast. People can find it on YouTube and they can find it on Rumble. So we're 4 episodes in. And
let me give you a tip. Take these viral promo clips you're going to do for your debate. Post those on your podcast site. Those will go viral and push them back in the podcast.
Well, that's kind of the goal. And we're going to take some clips from the Brandon Strock show and put them into little commercial breaks in the debate and just be like, hey, if you didn't know, go, you know. But my first guest was Joe Kent. That was, I guess, about a month ago. My second guest was Lauren Boebert. My third guest was Marjorie Taylor Greene. And my fourth guest is somebody that some your audience might know, but people maybe just haven't thought about in a while, was Joy Vila. And she's walked away from Scientology, and a lot of people who knew her knew kind of behind the scenes she was a Scientologist, and she's kind of breaking her silence on that. It was really an amazing interview. So I'm trying to interview controversial.
You're taking
people.
Everybody on.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And I'm not trying to do safe interviews. You know, I used to do that before. I never really had a podcast, but like I would do these kind of like one-off interviews, and like anybody who's in this influencer space knows that there's these like very safe ways that you have people from the admin on, or you have members of the family on, and you say like, oh,
Benny Johnson,
best. Yeah. And you say things, like, oh, best economy ever. And, more African Americans are out to work than ever before and buying homes and stuff. And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. And I'm not saying because it's a lie or, that it's disingenuous. I'm just like, I think this is too serious.
Yeah, it's never that you sold out. You were being a team player and just trying to be positive.
That's exactly right.
And at a certain point, you're like, then there's the other extreme, though, and I'm not trying to bash Candace Owens, where you go completely the other thing, where nothing's positive. Like, I said, this is good, this executive order, and them speaking out against the shots, the news coming out will make people be aware of it. It's not perfect. And people are like, oh, you're for the sellout. You're now supporting him. I'm like, no, I'm calling balls and strikes.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the world's too complex. I can't sit around and think, what am I going to do? How do I want to handle this? It's like the Tucker thing. I watched the clips on Monday, was pretty shocked. Finally, last night, my youngest daughter went to bed. The others are moved out. I sat there and watched the whole thing, and I was just like, Tucker's smart. What is he thinking here? And I'm not trying to bash Tucker. Everybody's questioning it. And I just have to say, just because Trump is going sideways doesn't mean these are our friends. I'm not saying Tucker's bad because I love him so much. But at the same time, I'm not going to sit here and not then criticize something just because I'm friends with somebody. Because when I do wrong, I want to admit it. And I do plenty. So I'm not hearing like a high horse judging Tucker or whatever. I'm just hearing the laptop's not real. It's Israel propaganda. You admit it's real. That's all real. Your dad censored. He fired hundreds of thousands of people that didn't take the shot. He engaged in all this. You guys are basically Chinese communist agents. So I just don't want to hear it from you. You're not. I mean, my point when I said, OK, I'm going to talk about this, because, I was like, yeah, it doesn't really matter. Was when he over and over again, he goes, you're awake now. I'm really proud of you. You guys have finally joined us. You're now the good guys. And I'm like, you're the high and mighty. You're like the benchmark that I need to attain to be Hunter Biden. I'm like, no.
Right. I'll believe that when I see it, and I'm gonna need a lot more data and a lot more information before. Look, I think I'm living proof that people can change, and
to me, Ron Paul's an icon of purity. He would never say I'm the benchmark. He is
right.
So I mean, like, dude, Ron Paul's over here. He's the benchmark of integrity. You're the opposite, Hunter.
Right.
I'm not gonna, because if I lie and.
That's the
I feel like
thing.
I should do whole exposés on Hunter now.
Yeah.
Even though I don't want to. I mean, it's like
I definitely am not a believer in the fact that, if someone does wrong or sides with something that's wrong, that, they have to be punished for the rest of their lives. I think people can change.
No, I totally agree.
We should encourage people to change. But there's got to be some sort of, ample demonstration that this person has actually learned something.
No, not lie and say none of what was said about me is true when it's all true.
Yeah.
And then I'm the moral authority.
Yep. 100%.
I mean, one thing, if you did a facelift tour, it's then, I'm glad you joined me in being awake.
Right.
And I'm like, dude, you ain't what we're trying to be.
No.
Like, let's play a clip of that just because,
yeah, let's look.
Again, now that I've begun down this road, and we love you, Tucker, And Tucker's done so much for me. I'm loyalty to a point, but I mean, there's so many of these clips. Let's play clip C. What was Israel's role in the laptop story? No addressing what's in it or the fact that it is him. I mean, literally hundreds of, I mean, I felt dirty looking at this. Trophy photos with him with like 13, 14-year-old girls half-dressed in robes and then talking about in other posts sex and then the next post the same day, the same place, the same outfit, jacking off. Yeah. I mean, I'm like, okay, maybe this isn't pedophilia, but it's close. You're not babysitting my kids and you're certainly not my benchmark of life. And then the recordings of the head of Chinese spies been gone a month. He funds me. What do I do? Those are audio files he saved. Those are him.
Yeah.
And then now I'm supposed to say, well, the shield of Israel being bad, it's like the magic wand you wave. So now Hunter's good because you're for Hunter or you're with Israel. Biden's administration had more Zionists in it, if it's possible, than even Trump. I mean, it's just a different wing of the Zionists. So here's that clip.
The allegation that there was abusive minors proven on the laptop, that came from the Israelis. I'm just telling you that. They came to me with that. So I know that. And one of the things that enraged me about the statement from those sleazy intel guys is that they blame the Russians for it. Now, maybe the Russians had a hand in it, but it was the Israelis who were pushing that fact. Yeah. Fact. I mean, literally to me.
Yeah.
So.
And you've gone through it.
But they're all such slaves.
Is there anything? I want to clear with your entire, like, you know, not a single thing in my anything that is in any way true about that.
Well, that's such a serious crime that I think it's just common sense that if there was evidence of that.
You think that it's common sense, but I'll tell you what, about 40 million people on X don't think that, you know, I mean, it's like,
there was an abuse of minors in there. If there was evidence,
how many people call me a pedophile to this day? Anyway, I'll spare you, but I agree with you. That's exactly right. And you know, it's,
but they were pushing that so hard, and all the intel guys are like, oh, it's Russia. It's like, you lie. You lie. Because they called me. I sent one of my producers out to go meet with a guy connected to Netanyahu. They were behind that. And I felt that everybody in D.C. knew that, but there was so much pressure never to criticize Israel in any way that they were just like, oh, it's the Russians. Oh, it's the Russians. They're the ones penetrating our political system. It's like, you lie. Everyone knows what's actually happening. That this was my perspective, and it drove me insane. And by the way, I didn't say that on Fox News. I'll admit it. I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't. You're right. I just want to say I was part of the problem also.
So
but
it's true that the Russians weren't behind it. It's true it was this thing they had that was being shopped around. Of course, Israel wanted Trump. Now we see for obvious reasons. That's true. Everything Tucker's saying is true, so credit to Tucker. But the point is, not just to prove my point, I don't even want to go look at it again, but do I need to play the tapes that are on it, that he doesn't deny are real, that he's a Chinese agent? Do I need to show him with the trophy photos of little girls? I mean, my point is, look out, Tucker, because the way this was presented was a fraud and for political reasons doesn't mean the guy you're sitting across from isn't a devil.
Well, two things. So I've never seen that clip. I actually haven't seen the episode yet.
It gets worse.
Two things struck me as I was watching that. So earlier with you, I said that, you know, I think it's possible Tucker's overcorrecting right now and kind of like an act of rebellion because he feels betrayed by Trump. I stand by that. And this is almost actually kind of an extension of that. Another thing that can happen to people, it's happened to me, I think it's happened to a lot of people, is that when you realize that something has been done to you, like, for instance,
you personalize everything.
And you almost, you're willing to believe the other person when they say it happened to them too, without stopping to think, well, that person could actually be latching on to what happened to you. And
this
using
is solidarity.
As exactly right. A solidarity. That's a great way to put it. The second thing is, let's not forget that this guy he received a full pardon from his father. He can now deny anything he wants. Nothing's going to be investigated. Nothing's going to be looked into. He's never going to be charged with a crime. So look, I'm not saying he is a pedophile. I'm not saying he whatever, but I'm saying,
do you and I pose with hundreds of photos with 12 and 13 year old girls half naked in beds?
I'm just saying at this point he can deny whatever he wants because it'll never get investigated. And I think that if Tucker is now realizing things that have been done to him and who was the source of that, to use your word, which is the perfect word, be apprehensive about finding solidarity with other people who are claiming the same thing. There's a good chance it may not be true.
And even if he didn't challenge the laptop, and I'm not criticizing Tucker, this is what I would have asked. What about his dad creating the censorship czar? What about the weaponization that came after you?
Right.
Which we were going to get to at the break, and I forgot to interrupt you with the break, which is a hard break. But, I mean, all of this is there, and you start thinking about all the things Biden did, and sure, he was a puppet, but this was a really horrible administration, too, in many ways worse, and consciously so. So talk about weaponization. What happened to you? That wasn't Trump. That was them. Now it's Trump protecting that.
Right.
Todd Blanche is protecting that.
Yeah. And that, so, okay, perfect setup there, because I was basically saying, you know, I have a lot. I had certain expectations from this administration, which, as I was saying earlier in the show, I acknowledge I don't expect other people to care as much as I care about weaponization or de-weaponization or getting justice for some of these things. It was very personal for me, and I will ever really fully know what I went through, and others who I went through this with went through. That being said, I do know what is not being done. I do know what is not happening. It makes absolutely no sense that it's happening. And so I'm not going to walk through the whole January 6th story because it would take too much time and people know it. Long story short, I didn't go in the Capitol on January 6th. I didn't engage in any violence on January 6th. I didn't encourage anyone else to be violent. I didn't even witness any violence.
And that's but you were a political target.
That's correct. I was the leader of the Walkaway Movement, the largest national movement of former Democrats walking away from the party. Hundreds of thousands of people have joined my movement. Hundreds of thousands of people walked away from the Democratic Party, shared their stories. And my organization, I think it was a primary threat to the Democratic Party and the establishment, not to mention the fact that, you know, I don't make a big deal about this. Who cares? But I am a gay man who walked away from the Democratic Party and started a very successful movement. And I'm exactly the kind of person they hate. They hate it when black people walk away. They hate it when Hispanics walk away. They hate it when gay people walk away.
They think they own you.
That's right. Yeah. And if you've got one of us and a loud mouth like me who's inspiring other people, they hate it worse than anything. So I would actually argue, and some, you know, the other people can disagree, I think that they hate someone like me more than they hate someone
like Charlie Kirk.
You know, Charlie might have been way, way bigger than me and I had a bigger organization. But to your point, I am one of their owned classes of people, and I broke free from their ranks and encouraged other people to do it, too. And
well,
I
you're going after their
more.
Home turf.
Exactly.
Which
right.
I would then just throw this before I forget to say it and get to it later, which is what the Trump thing's begun. We own you.
Yeah.
We can change our policy anytime. We reject you and you're bad if you don't change with us. It's the same thing. No, we bought into this for these reasons. You don't own us. So I think the neocons have taken the Democrat playbook, not just with the Black Lives Matter like propaganda, but the same way. And I think that's why we're rejecting it is, no, you don't own us.
Yeah. But if I could bring back to weaponization.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. So literally, I did not commit a crime on January 6th of any kind, and really nothing that even could be interpreted as a crime. But because I happened to be there and because I shot a video outside of the building and uploaded it to Twitter, which has absolutely established irrefutably where I was, they were like, great, awesome, let's build a case out of this. So since there was no real case, they just started making one up. So they started saying things. They first of all, my case began with the FBI raiding my house, putting me in handcuffs and taking me to jail. No one ever contacted me and said, we want to ask you some questions. We want to clear some things up. We want to get, like, none of that. It started with a, like, Osama bin Laden style raiding of my home and taking me to jail. And then after I got out of jail, I learned what I was being accused of. And what's a funny fact about my case, I actually got charged with more felonies than most people who went inside the building. People who actually.
No, I remember. I remember.
Yeah, I was charged with three felonies and a misdemeanor for 8 minutes of standing outside of the building. And here's an example. The people who went inside the Capitol on January 6th got a misdemeanor charge called occupying a restricted building. I was outside and I got a felony charge of occupying restricted grounds.
I remember.
They charged me. So imagine that. I was charged with a felony for standing
on
the ground.
By the way, let me tell you what leaked in the Washington Post. I don't believe the Washington Post, but I know because I was told. I was indicted for occupying a restricted grounds, but even Merrick Garland thought it was too far and killed the indictment. So I was going to be in. I was going to be in. Well, they just because I was saying don't go in. You were just outside.
Yeah.
And remember, Owen never went in. They said in his first indictment, he led them into the building.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it's like people hear this. They go, what do you mean? How do you indict somebody to do anything? Folks, until you've been there, you don't know. I mean, it is. And then I later learned like 3 years ago in the Washington Post 20-page article, because I already heard this from my lawyers, I was indicted and the attorney general killed it. Not because he liked me. He was just like, this is too much. I mean, the guy's out there saying don't go in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, people don't know. This is, and then now Todd Blanche has killed basically all those investigations of Martin, Ed Martin.
Well, right. And but it, so if I could say, because I want to kind of explain to people this one little piece of it.
Yeah, I didn't mean to write myself in. I'm just in it.
No. But this is the one little piece.
I can just vouch for what you're saying.
That basically began all of the weaponization against me. So they charged me with all these felonies, which is, you know, it's called overstacking. They do this on purpose to force a plea deal because nobody wants to have to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and go to Washington, D.C. with a D.C. judge and a D.C. jury where you're very likely to get convicted. Yeah, oh, God. Yeah, I was facing like 35 years in prison on these charges. And so they said, you know, all of this or we'll drop all of these felonies and charge you with a misdemeanor if you'll plead guilty. And my attorney said to me, this was back when, so there's a lot of J6 lawyers, they use this term, what they call J6 jurisprudence, which means the way that law was interpreted after January 6th became completely different. None of them, despite all their experience, had any idea how to navigate through January 6th. It was uncharted waters. Nothing like this had happened before. So my attorney said to me, it's a misdemeanor. He said, you know, I know you're not guilty. You didn't do anything, but he was like, plead guilty to a misdemeanor. He said, they took you to jail. So he said, no one goes to jail on a first offense misdemeanor. The judge is going to give you time served. And he said, this is all going to be behind you in a couple of months. I didn't like it, but I thought to myself, all right, I can live with that. That's okay. Fine. What I didn't realize is, so when you plead guilty or you make the decision that you're going to plead guilty, the government gets to write your confession. It's called a statement of offense. So when they presented me with my statement of offense, it was just a lie from top to bottom. Said I went to the Capitol with the intention to disrupt Congress. Said that I witnessed the crowd tearing a shield away from an officer and that I screamed, take it, to encourage the crowd to take the shield from an officer. That I stood outside the building shouting, go, 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 to encourage people to go. None of this was true. None of it was true. And we went to them and we said, this isn't true. Like, I'm not willing to sign this. And they said, you sign it or you go to trial. These are your options. So I went into a very deep depression when I signed my plea deal. I mean, for about I was like suicidal for like 2 weeks, just not because, but it just wasn't true. And to know that your own government can force you to say things that aren't true, literally just weaponizing the power of the government against you. It's very depressing and very demoralizing.
Well, imagine being the Proud Boys and Stuart Rhodes. They came to them and said, just say Trump sent you in there. They never even talked to Trump.
Yeah.
They never talked to Trump. And I was there when they were planning. What happens to the Antifa attacks today? Well, let's work with the police. I was there with them. They didn't plan this. So I knew they were innocent. But they would come and say, if you just say Trump sent you, it's all over.
They wanted everyone to turn on Trump. But so I signed
and then we go to
stupid bogus plea deal. And I said that I did these things, that I encouraged the crowd to take the shield and all this stuff. So the moment that I did that, see, like a normal person with a normal brain can't foresee what's this all leads to. So that was the criminal part of it. The next thing that happened is because I signed that plea deal, a Soros-funded nonprofit law firm called Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law finds 8 black Capitol police officers and represents them, sues me under the KKK Act, alleging that I'm a white supremacist who went to the Capitol on January 6th.
Because you now admitted you're guilty.
To attack black police officers.
Go to prison for 35 years or sign this false statement. Then they use the false statement to sue you.
Correct. That case went on for 2.5 years and cost me about $250,000 to get through. Like, thankfully, I had a really good lawyer and he was able after 2.5 years to get me out of the case. It took a lot, but it never went to trial. But it was that was the worst part, actually, was the civil case. But then the third, I call it the trifecta. I got the trifecta: criminal case, civil case, and I was then deposed and subpoenaed by the January 6th committee. Mm-hmm. And I had to testify before Congress on their
I did too. That
committee.
Was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I mean,
and notice they destroyed the record of that because it was so damning our testimony.
And people need to understand,
to them,
it's not just an interview. You don't just show up and it wastes, you know, 8 hours of your time. It is months of providing thousands of documents and you have to pay lawyers for all of this. I mean, that was another $35,000-$40,000 just for document discovery from the January 6th. And you don't get to tell them no. So all in, I spent about $500,000 getting through January 6th for the 8 minutes that I stood outside of the building. I had to go through a criminal case, a civil case, the January 6th committee, and I had to go to jail. I had to get an ankle monitor and go through house arrest. And then I got 4 years of federal supervision and fines.
You got called a traitor for signing the plea deal.
And put on the terrorism watch list, put on the Quad S list, and they didn't just come after me, they came after my organization.
And then now Trump has killed those investigations into what they did.
I'm not even aware that they ever started. So I want to give you just a really...
It was going on with Ed Martin, and Todd Blanche killed it.
Yeah, I keep telling this story. I'll make this very brief because I know, but like, I want people to know this, and I'll make it quick. There's a January 6th defendant named Matthew Perna. He was a nonviolent guy, went inside the Capitol for, you know, walked around, left. They came after him, charged him with all these crimes, felonies, et cetera. He was just the type of person who was not... emotionally strong enough to, because it's very brutal what you go through.
A bunch of them committed suicide.
He's one of them. So, but the reason why he committed suicide is because it was getting dragged on for so long. They dragged these cases out. They just made it as torturous as possible. And he went to his attorney and he said, I can't take this anymore. I can't hang on. I need this to end. His attorney said to him, if you want it to end, you just need to plead guilty. Just plead guilty. And, you know, and he said, your worst case scenario, you're looking at a year in prison for what you're charged with. It was not easy for him, but he made the decision. Okay, if I have to go to prison for a year, I can get through. I can do that. So he did what his lawyer advised him to do. He pled guilty. And after he pled guilty and it was already on record, then the government came to him with a nasty trick again that no one could see coming. Okay, now that you've pled guilty and it's on the record, you already pled guilty, we're going to seek a terrorism enhancement and we're going to seek 9 years in prison for you on this terrorism enhancement. And as soon as they said that to him, he went into his garage and hanged himself. He killed himself. And the lawyer, so his Aunt Jerry has been his advocate, and she called the prosecutor in his case and said, you did this. You drove my nephew to suicide. And the prosecutor said to his Aunt Jerry, if he just could have held on, if he could have held on a little longer, we don't think the judge really would have gone for that terrorism enhancement. That prosecutor still works for the DOJ. He is still working for the Trump DOJ. So
when I was familiar with the case, I forgot that guy's name, but yeah, that person needs to be gone.
No, all of these people need to be gone.
They promoted a bunch of the J6, like the main J6 inquisitors. Yeah, they promoted them.
Cash and Dan actually gave promotions to some of these FBI agents who were actually like the architects of January 6th.
Well, it's 3D chess, Brandon. You should just shut up.
No, it certainly is not. And when I hear people in the MAGA movement, who, by the way, I have sacrificed so much for and given so much of myself for, I don't want to be sitting here having this conversation with you. And when I have people in the MAGA movement say to me, I'm sure it's happening behind the scenes. You just need to be patient. You just stop being so selfish. Trump is doing the best that he can. It doesn't take 2 years to fire somebody.
Well, where are the indictments? Where are the indictments? Exactly. Yeah, we're not like Democrats. We're not in a cult. And, you know, we got to just move past Trump. You're interviewing me for your podcast tomorrow. But one of the topics I hope you raise is what is coming after Trump, which you're already doing. We better start having this discussion.
Yeah, we have to.
Because I noticed the neocons I debated on your thing that will be out soon. They just kept saying, we got to have Trump. He's the future. He's not the future.
Right. Are we going to a break or we're talking
it's
about
It's over, brother. We're out of time.
The interview's over?
We only got like 40 seconds left.
Oh, we can't talk about the entire future of the conservative movement in 40 seconds?
No, I got to do it on your show.
Oh, good. Alex Jones will be on the Brandon Strzok Show in a couple of weeks.
People can find that where?
They can go to YouTube and Rumble and look up Brandon Strzok. My last name is spelled Straka. Please subscribe. Please go on there, click like, leave some comments, watch the interviews, and push them out on social. There it is. Look at that.
All right.
Please subscribe.
Well, we're going to save this country and the world. Brandon, great job.
Hell yeah.
Brandon Strzok on X. And Harrison Smith in the War Room's coming up now. Be sure and watch it on Rumble X, everywhere else, and AlexJonesLive.com. Share those links. We love you all. Thanks for the support. AlexJonesShore.com.
Folks, I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, methylene blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go!
Gee, Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of methylene blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we?
Billy, did you know that methylene blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life.
Careful, Billy. He bites. Oh. Look. Vodka. Potato hooch.
Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow! The methylene blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc, I don't know what got into me. I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the alexjonesstore.com.
What does .com mean?
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.